everyone. Welcome back to Wag Station. I am your host, Talia Olivera. And today I had Greg Perkins on. He is a national U.S. sales manager of Packer Mellum and also the co-owner. Greg's a great guy. I met him probably about a year ago as we've continued our work with Packer Mellum. And he's just a great guy. He is righteous and just doing right by the pet parent and by the independent pet store. So it was great to be able to sit down and chat with him a little bit further and really dive into his history in the pet world and kind of what they're doing over at Packer Mellum. And just to clarify a few things, so Packer Mellum, we talk about them a lot. Obviously, Greg worked for them. He's a co-owner. And they are a rep company, meaning they kind of bridge the gap between brands and distributor and brands and retail stores. So they go out representing these brands who don't have their own reps, and they're able to talk about them in person and show the products to these stores and to help them distribution-wise and to pretty much get their name out there to help them grow in a thoughtful way. So Packer Mellum has been around actually since 2014. And they have some awesome brands that we carry, quite a few of them. He also mentions pet food experts, PFX, he refers to it in the episode. And that again stands for pet food experts. They are a huge distributor pretty much almost in all 50 states in the US. So if you're in the independent pet world as a retailer, most likely you are using PFX as your distributor and carrying quite a few of their products. And then lastly, he also speaks about Canophera. That's Canophera. And they are new to us and actually new to Packer Mellum. And they're a huge brand out of Europe. I believe they just started getting representation over in the U.S. They do dog chews made of natural products. So they do antlers. They do chews out of like briar root and coffee wood. So these natural products that dogs can chew on to get that natural chewing instinct, but really cool, you know, kind of unique products. They also do coconut husks. So we love them. They're new to the store, but they're doing really well. So I just wanted to clarify a few of the brands that we kind of speak of and just elaborate on them a little bit. Other than that, yeah, Greg was great. We loved chatting and we got to talk about, again, how why the pet world is so special and why we all kind of stay in it and never leave. And yeah, why, you know, why it is so welcoming as well to everyone that kind of joins it. I think you guys will love this episode. I think you're going to really enjoy, again, learning about Packer Mellum and what they're doing. And as always, happy listening. Please take the second to rate and review the episode in whatever app you are using. And we appreciate it. And thank you guys so much. Happy listening. Hey guys, welcome back. I am here today with Greg Perkins, National U.S. Sales Manager of Packer Mellum and co-owner. How are you, Greg? Thank you for being here.
I'm doing fantastic. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you. I know we've been trying to connect for a while, so it's nice to kind of do this and to kind of chat during the holidays all about like the pet industry. I love it.
Yeah, thanks for your patience. It's kind of that crazy time of year because
absolutely.
We have a lot of fall shows with distributors and that kind of stuff. And it's just now starting to unwind. And this is kind of a nice time of the year.
Yeah, no, definitely. So I think I always like to start first and foremost with like how you got into the pet world. I know we've talked before a little bit about your journey, but like tell everyone like how you got into the pet industry and like what led you to this path.
Well, it's interesting. You know, when I got out of college, I just figured I was going to go into business. You know, I didn't know any better than a lot of people did when they got out of college and so forth. So that's what I did. You know, and when I got out of college, and not to date myself, if you had a degree and you just wanted to go into business, you could just go into business and so forth. So that's what I did. And I went at it for about 10 years and I just never was happy. I just knew it was not meant for me. And so I had, you know, put money aside. I was single, so I didn't have kids and all that kind of stuff, whatever. And I just started looking at businesses, small businesses that I could afford and to get into. And I must have looked at probably 30 different businesses, Talia, if not more.
Sure.
And didn't know where I wanted to go, but the more I did it, the more I thought about it. I said, if I'm going to spend a lot of time doing it, I wanted to do something I enjoyed.
Yes.
And I've always been a pet person. And so an opportunity came about and I really didn't know what I was getting into. But I got into the guy that actually, it was a franchise. He was just starting up a franchise and I was the first franchisee. I didn't know this at the time, but he had some financial issues. And so he really needed me to come aboard. So anyway, it was good because I was able to be in the first franchisee. I was able to kind of look at the contract and kind of rewrite it to where it kind of seemed reasonable and got into it and was just as green as you could be other than loving dogs and cats. And so I had a lot to learn and it was a fun, interesting path.
Absolutely. Now, where were you at this point? Where were you living when this was all going down?
So I was in the suburbs of Atlanta, probably about 40 minutes north of Atlanta, which was a good section for where I wanted stores because there was enough disposable income and in that area that people were going to spend the money on their pets and pets were part of the family. So it was a good place to start.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like that is a little similar to when my mom and I were looking at businesses together because we were on separate paths, her and I. And we had talked for like years prior about like, oh, we should do something together. You know, we should look at franchises. We did look at different industries. We said, well, we want to be our own bosses together and kind of, you know, work together, grow something together, you know, be part of the community. And we just didn't know where we wanted to land. We did actually, the pet world was sort of always on the docket. It just had to be the right opportunity. So we did look at some franchises and then, Wag Nation came up for sale, our storefront in Newport. And then obviously, you know, here we are 5 years later, but it's similar because we did do some research on the pet world. And obviously it was a different time frame than when you were buying, but we'd never done it before. We weren't in it before. We did the same thing. We loved pets. We knew we loved pets. We had pets, but we kind of went into it with fresh eyes. So
yeah, it's a great experience. You know, it was funny when it first came up, I realized that this is probably what I wanted to do. And being green, I needed a little bit of reassurance that, okay, I've got this guy that's actually been doing it for a while so that I can learn from him. My practices and our beliefs were a little bit different. I learned more and more as we went along. And I eventually bought out of that franchise, but it still was, his experience was valuable to me to learn that process because it would have been overwhelming if I had not gone through that path. Because, you know, it's interesting to tell you, like the evolution of pet stores are so different today than they were at that time. And I was a full-on pet store, which, you know, today a full-on pet store is not necessarily what a full-on pet store back then is. But, you know, I had like 18 tanks of fish and I had, you know, 10 or 12 tanks of reptiles. And I had grooming in the back and we did small animals. We did birds and guinea pigs and rabbits and feeders and you name it. Now, he didn't do that. He didn't do all of that. He was more into the small animal and grooming, but I was just, as customers kept coming in and their interest, I was like, let's try it. Let's just see what I can do with reptiles and let's see what I can learn. And so without kids in the beginning, I was able to, you know, just put 24/7 into it. And, but it was intimidating in the sense that, you had all these live animals that depended upon you and dogs and cats are a lot different than reptiles and fish. If you don't do those things right, they die quickly.
Yeah.
And so you have to learn. And it was just one of those things is like, I got to be an expert like soon on all this stuff. And
yeah.
And outside of those areas, the nutrition part, which I've always gotten into, even being in a full line store, which is kind of looked upon a little bit differently today, where you look at like your store, you know, a lot of times it's classified like as a high-end independent store.
Yes.
And so you would walk in that store. I would walk in that store and say, okay, they probably know a lot about nutrition and so forth and whatever. And then you've got your farm and feed stores and you've got your full-on stores. And sometimes we classify those, you know, and think maybe they don't know as much about the nutritional level and so forth. And sometimes that's true. But I'm really kind of proud of starting there because it really taught me a foundation that I don't think that I could have learned otherwise. Because, you know, one of the things that I like to tie into nutrition is the practicality of nutrition and animal welfare, because when you are taking care of a guinea pig or a snake or a African cichlid, your whole intent is, how do I recreate what their natural habitat is and what they should be eating, what their environment should be? And I think that translates 100% to dogs and cats.
Yeah.
I think we've gotten away from that, but that's one of the things I think is the basis of where you start.
Yeah. I think you actually brought up a good point. I feel like we were just talking about this with my last guest, that when you kind of got into it, like everything was sort of lumped together in the pet store. Like it was, you know, all the animals were together, right? Your fish, your small animals, reptiles, dogs and cats. But it really has evolved. I feel like, not that there aren't stores still like that, there definitely are, but it really has become like a lot, like you said, like specialized. Like there are definitely stores like, no, I'm just going to kind of focus on dogs and cats. And there's some stores I've seen, there's stores in our areas that it's just like birds, like exotic birds. Sure. So it has evolved where people are like, yeah, that's great. Like having all like a pet store and like with general supplies, but they think they found how important it is to have like smaller stores or just specialized stores that are targeting those specific pets where they can really dive deep into the nutrition of that pet. Or just like you kind of mentioned, like the environment that these specific animals should be living in and kind of, you know, going back to like nature and, you know, exploring those areas. So I think it is a really special evolution and to see how far it's come over the years.
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny when, this is something you would appreciate because I could see you doing this, but like when I was looking at the first store that I bought, I went into the parking lot and I just camped out in my car for a while just to see the traffic patterns.
Oh, yeah. Like
and, you know, we had a Publix, which was a big anchor, and we also had a Home Depot. So we had a good foundation there. But again, getting back to, and what I started looking at was how far would people travel for dog food. I don't know if this has changed because I really haven't looked into it since, but at the time it was like 5 to 7 miles is really kind of what they were with where they would go.
Yeah.
So I was kind of looking at the area and I was like, well, this is a good fit because the homes around this area are very family oriented. They're not wealthy, but they're certainly going to take care of their pets.
Yeah.
But what I found was very interesting is with the fish and the reptiles, those people would come a long way to look at what you had in inventory. And as long as I kept stuff in there that they would, every time that they would come in, they would see stuff that was different. They would be loyal customers. And you get a little bit of that with grooming, that if you get a really good groomer, they're kind of loyal to the store, but they'll only drop so far because there's so many different groomers around.
Yeah.
But what was nice about that is, with some of those customers that were reptile customers or whatever the case is, they weren't always necessarily feeding the high-end food. So it gave you another opportunity to get their dogs on a different type of a dog or pet. Or, excuse me, I'm a dog person.
Yeah.
But their pets on a good food, no matter what it was. So that was pretty cool. And then the other thing that I always found intriguing is I kind of evolved through this, and my store even changed through the years as you adapt to what's going on, is in the beginning years, and I don't know if this was thought out or if it just happened, full line with the animal care and the husbandry and teaching people how to take care of their animals and so forth was the advantage that we had over big box. And, you know, you would talk, laugh about like Pet Dumb, you know, we would call this what we call Pet Smart or whatever, but they would have the revolving 16-year-old in there or whatever. And so that they would just never know really the intricacies of like here's a cockatiel, here's a red-tailed boa or whatever. And so you would learn and you would have that advantage of that. And then that started to change with the nutrition, you know, later, that if you had the higher foods and they came to you because of all the problems they had with eating whatever, then you could actually gain the loyalty that way. So
yeah, that's a very important point. Yeah, the differences with staffing with those two kinds of stores too. And I got to ask, because I don't think I even knew that you did grooming back then. I've got to ask, because even just doing it for 3 years, we've learned a lot. How was it back then? Like, how was the clientele? How was it managing groomers? Was it the same? Like, how was it?
Oh, it was rough. It was really rough. And I will say explicitly, I didn't do grooming. You don't want me to groom a dog.
Yeah, same here.
I don't have the patience, but I do have respect for what they did. But it is, you know, there are a lot of people out there that are quote unquote groomers, but to find a good groomer is tough. And when you get good groomers, it can really do a great service to your business.
Yes.
Because that customer that's coming in that's paying a lot of money for a haircut isn't going to blink when it comes to putting the right food and all that kind of stuff. And so they're loyal. And so I think it's really important to do grooming, but man, you've got to be prepared with all the drama that comes with it.
Yes. Yes.
And the management alone, just managing that area is so different than managing the front end of the store.
Yeah.
And I think now I had two stores. I got into a second probably sooner than I should have, but I knew the opportunity was too good to say no.
Sure.
So I just kept biting off things I probably shouldn't have, but
we all do it.
You learn quick, right?
Yes.
So I had, I think it was 42 groomers over this period of time between those two stores.
Wow.
But sometimes you would get, you know, someone that would just flake out after a week and then you'd but you get a little bit of everything. I felt like I could have written a book. I mean, I've bailed them out of jail. I've got, you know, just about everything.
You could definitely write a book. I mean, we could talk about grooming alone, you know, for an episode. And again, we've only been doing it now. It'll literally be 3 years that we introduced grooming in like a couple weeks. It'll be three years. And it's amazing. Like, we definitely did, again, we did our research before we got into it. We did talk to consultants, but you don't know until you're in it. You don't really know. You can't really appreciate and understand it. And again, we're just owners. We are not groomer owners. Like, so we do have a wonderful staff now of groomers, but it is not for the faint of heart. It is not for sensitive souls, because the dogs are tough. The people are probably even tougher. When I say that, I mean like the customers. And don't get me wrong, we have wonderful, loyal customers. We have some great dogs that come in and are happy-go-lucky. But the other end of the spectrum is it's really tough, and you have to be prepared for things to go awry, and you have to, you know, definitely have some tough skin for that industry, for sure.
You really do. I you know, you're never going to feel the wrath of a customer as you will a groomer when they feel the haircut was not done correctly. Or it could be something as little as they cut the quick on the dog and they go into the car and they bleed in the Mercedes, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It runs the gamut. And you know, or you bathe them and then the dogs do what they do and they pee on themselves or walk and poop. And
yes.
So you see it all. And it's a learning experience without a doubt. And it's not for the faint of heart, like you said, but
yeah,
you know, it can really be a difference maker in your business if you're also looking at the numbers, because, you know, you're not buying that dog. That's not inventory, you know? And so that dog's coming in and he's leaving that day. And that customer is going to be in your shop twice that day and most likely going to buy something. So
yeah.
You know, it goes a lot further than that, but you have to look at the business size of it as well. And it can really up your margin, which is nice, because so many people think, you know, I remember distributors and manufacturers coming into my stores and they think, oh my gosh, you're a great store and you move a lot of volume and all this kind of stuff. And they think that you're making tons of money, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, you can make a living, but it can be deceiving. It's hard work.
Absolutely. No, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I think because we've had so much growth over 5 years and we have introduced services, people, again, have a lot of misconceptions about, like, you know, how much profit and all this stuff we have. And not that we aren't growing and that we aren't doing well, because we are, you know, that's, and we're very fortunate and we feel very lucky every single day for sure, all the stuff we've done in the last 5 years. But also, you don't see behind the scenes, right? But you understand, like, you throw money back into the business. You're constantly, like, networking and thinking of new things, and you're giving, the good people are giving back to their staff and offering more to the staff and being able to evolve that way. So there's so much, especially the first few years, like, there's so much going on. Like, even though a store looks like they're booming and there's all these things going on and, like, events, there's much more to it. So I hope people, you know, understand that and respect that, especially with a small business.
Yeah, it's very difficult, and things happen, and rent increases, and you know, it's you know, when you look at it as the quote unquote American dream, I think it's just a lot more difficult on small businesses in this country than it is large corporations. Large corporations get a lot of tax breaks and so forth. And small businesses, when you're looking at what you pay per square foot, whether that be on the rent or that be on your utilities and so forth, is so much more than what you would pay in a household. And people just don't realize that. And there's a lot to keep up with employees and pay and all that kind of stuff. And so anyway, it's you say all that, but at the same time, I wouldn't want to be doing anything else. I mean, this is a great industry.
Absolutely.
So I'm glad we're both here, and you do an amazing job at what you do.
Thank you. No, and what do you, so I always bring that up too, especially with all my other pet professionals. What do you, because I feel like we all have a lot of similar stories. Like, we weren't going to get into this pet world, then we kind of fell into it. Maybe there was a job opportunity, or we're like, oh, we'll try it. It'll be short term. And then you stay in it. Like, what do you think personally, like, makes it so special that people are like, yeah, like, this is my career now. This is what I want to do. I don't want to do anything else.
Well, you know, it's funny. I remember when I don't know how many years I was into it, but my favorite salesperson that called on me, when I just said, I made a comment to her one time, and I said, well, you know what? You're never married to the business, you know? And I guess I had come from the corporate world, and I kind of looked at, you know, at things that way for a while. And she looked and she said, Greg, she said, you know, this is, the pet industry is like the mafia. Once you get in, you don't get out.
I love that. That's hilarious. Yeah.
And 25, 28 years later, whatever it is, here I am. And her words couldn't be more truthful. But, you know, there's certain things that I certainly thought it was going to be a lot easier. I thought, oh, how difficult could it be to talk about dogs and cats all day long or whatever, and make some money at the same time. There's a lot to it. But I think in general, the people that are in the pet business and the people that are coming into the pet stores are good people.
Yeah.
You know, people that like pets are generally good people, and they're in a good mood, and they like talking about pets. So I think it's fun, and, you know, it's not rocket science, and we may not be doing the earth a greater cause every single day, but we are at least making, it can make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think also pets can make a big difference in our lives and stuff. You know, we've seen some crazy times in the last couple of years.
Absolutely.
Pets makes a big difference in those people's lives.
Yeah. That's a great point. I mean, again, not to get off on a tangent, but a little bit. It has been a crazy few years, and I've actually talked to some of my customers about how they were so grateful that they had their pets with them, because they lived by themselves during all the COVID stuff, and they would have been so lonely, or it would have been so much worse for them being so isolated, not having a companion. So, I mean, yeah, that is special in itself. And I think that's such a good point to bring up, because they really aren't just pets anymore. That's not really what it's all about anymore. They are family members. They are companions, you know, they are by your side. So I think if nothing else, the last few years definitely taught us that. So I think that was a great point that you just kind of mentioned.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and it could be whatever period. I remember hearing the term heart dog, you know, in this industry sometimes. And I was like, I don't understand that, because every dog I've had, I just love to death, you know. and that's obviously the case. But, you know, I do remember when I went through a divorce, which is always a tough time for anybody. And the dog that was with me through all of that, you know, just really became my heart dog. And she was one that was kind of special to me to begin with, because my kids found her in the woods. And
oh, wow.
I don't ever told you this story, but
I don't think you did.
They were down. I had this cabin in North Georgia Mountains, and they came back and they were running back and they were all excited. They were like, "Oh my God, you got to come down. There's a dog by the river." And so I was like, "Okay, well, let me check the dog out." Cause you have no idea what the temperament's like. And my kids were little at the time. So
yeah.
I went down, and this poor dog was like swollen and limping. And I pulled 24 ticks off this dog, and they were down in the inner canal. They just like stacked up, and you know, I was just pulling them. And I was like, you know what? If she's trusting me as a stranger to do this, then, you know, she's a good dog. Let me take her into the vet, because I don't want to make any promises to the kids.
Yeah, that's tough. Oh my God, this is our dog now. Yeah, I would be freaking out.
We've got a business. We've got dogs. We've got kids. We've got all kinds of stuff going on. And so I took her to the vet, and the vet knew what I did. And he said, "Come on back here, Greg. You got to see this x-ray." So he said, "Look at the leg." And the leg was broken, and he said it was starting to fuse together. She said she's been living in the woods long enough that the bone's fusing back together, and there's nothing we can do about it. She's just going to have a gimp leg. And so I said, "Well, this dog's my dog. If she's been surviving in the woods with three good legs, eating whatever she can eat, and again, it kind of goes back to living off the land and doing what they're supposed to, then she's going to be my dog." And, you know, a year later, she's running with me and eating raw, and she's just, you can't even tell what leg she's limping off of, you know, what's her bad leg. That
That's a wonderful story.
Cool experience. Yeah. So that was my heart dog that it had a hard time pulling off the business card for a long time. So.
Oh, I love that though. And it also, I think that also speaks to how resilient pets are, right? And how trusting they are, that, you know, stories like that are very heartwarming.
They really are. And you know, dogs are one of the more adaptive species. And there's good and bad to that, because they've adapted to us feeding them incorrectly for a long period of time. And you could not do that with certain other species. They would certainly die if they weren't fed correctly or get the right temperature, humidity, blah, blah, blah. But we think, okay, well, they're doing okay because they're surviving and they're living. Doesn't mean that they're being fed correctly.
Yeah.
And, because they've adapted to what you're feeding them. So, but yeah, they're incredibly adaptive.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we've talked kind of about how you started in the industry, and I'd love to jump on to like Packermelum and like what you're doing now. How did you get on the Packermelum train? Like, how did that happen? How did you guys get connected?
Well, that's an interesting story too. So, you know, I met the owner, Rob Mellum, when I was working for Southeast Pet, which is a regional distributor. After I got out of the retail space, I told the owner of Southeast Pet what I was doing, and I won't get into all that, but he ended up hiring me to come work for them. So I managed a sales team, brought on a sales team and managed them, and also maintained a territory. So I met him when he was with Sojo's. We developed a relationship, and I liked the way that he thought and worked. And then since that point, I went on and worked for a couple different food manufacturers in the industry. And I was with one of them, and he came walking down the aisle at one of the shows. And I stepped out in the aisle and just said, "Rob Mellum, I haven't seen you in a couple of years. What are you up to?" And he shook my hand and he goes, "I was looking for you." And I was like, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Do you know what I'm doing?" I said, "I have no freaking idea." So he told me, and he said, "I had just asked a few people, you know, who I should look to help build the East Coast, and your name came up." And he goes, "Oh, I know Greg, we have a relationship." So that's how it started. And I told him, I said, "You know, it's difficult at this stage of my life to make a change, particularly when you're two people, and I have to have a certain income, and it's not about a fancy car, a fancy house, anything like that. It's just what's going out."
Yeah, absolutely.
Kids.
Yeah.
Stuff. So he understood that, and he made it work. And I took a pay cut, but it all worked itself out and worked myself into East Coast manager and then national sales manager and now part owner. And then actually part owner of Momentum now. So,
yes, we have to talk about Momentum for sure. One of our favorites. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's been a fun experience. It's been 8 years. He was around for nine and a half when he first started.
Yeah, because he started back in 2014. So you were there at the early stages, it sounds like.
I was in 2015. Yep.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was early stages and so forth. And we just had a few brands, but I won't say we're lucky. You know, Rob had some good relationships and a few good brands came on board. You know, Bixby, who, you know, at the time was just mushrooms and some supplements and so forth, yeah. And some American jerky, which didn't exist at the time. Northwest Naturals, who was making their own raw food, which is a rarity. And so we had a couple of nice staples to build off of. We had Pet Food Experts who was repping that, and we had some relationships with them. And because of the early success, we were able to pull in some more brands, and PFX was adding those. And then my relationship with Southeast Pet, we were able to build it up in the Southeast region and so forth. And we started really where we knew, East Coast and Midwest, Liz being from the Midwest and Rob being from the Midwest and myself being on the East Coast. So we kind of started there and then had
a lot of growth now.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. So we're nationwide and it's fun. What I enjoy the most is you do get these small mom and pop companies that a lot of times don't know what they're doing. They don't even know what an ISO is sometimes.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. They don't know.
No SKUs on the bags. Yeah.
Yeah. But they've got a good concept. They've got a good product. I like working with them, and you kind of take a little bit of responsibility saying, hey, I want to see them do well and their family do well. And then also, of course, work with the distributors that you have relationships with, and then work with the retailers and kind of be that liaison in between the three, because I'm a big believer in trying to create win-wins for everybody. So it's, everybody's having fun. And
what's the process like when a brand comes to you guys, or maybe you guys approach them about, you know, giving them representation? What is that kind of vetting process like?
It's changed a lot over the years. I mean, we were certainly more of going out talking to brands and kind of selling ourselves and what we've done and our relationships and so forth, because that's really kind of what this business is. It's still a relationship business, is knowing the retailers and knowing the distributors, because you can only see so many retailers and you can only work with so many distributors. So it's a matter of having the relationships with what you think may be the right partners. But as time came and we were very blessed to have some success out of the gate and kept adding new reps, and we had some new, you know, some strong reps. And so at that point we have more people saying, hey, do you have some space available? And we wanted to make sure that we didn't have too many brands where we couldn't know what we were talking about with each brand.
Yeah.
And also be able to have time to be able to discuss it with a retailer, because a retailer has so much time when you go in to the store. But the manufacturers wanted as many reps and as much coverage as possible. So we had to kind of find that balance. And
we're still
working through that.
Do you guys, I'm sure you guys have advice for maybe a new brand that wants to get into the market? Or, I mean, even my customers sometimes are like, oh, I feel like I should make something like this. I've never been able to find a product like this, and they want to like get into, you know, maybe distribution, or maybe they're just starting out. Do you have advice for anyone that wants to start like product wise in the pet world?
Yeah. If they're really young and new, starting into the industry, but they've got a good product, a lot of times we'll say, you know, you're just not ready for this step, because what you would have to pay us, it would take away from your profit and it would be.
Yeah.
So sometimes they spread themselves too wildly, but when, you know, a lot of them, a distributor will say no, because they don't have an established brand.
Yeah.
And warehouse space is tough to get into. Focus on the area that you live in, go out face to face and see some of those retailers, and then build your way out and build that reputation. And then just make sure that when you're pricing, you're doing your pricing structure, that you leave the room for the distributors so that the there's enough margin there for everybody to work with, because if you don't, then you're never going to have, distributors never going to come on board because they can't make any money. And you're just not going to be able to do it all, where you're going to manufacture it and ship it and, you know, do the whole thing and actually have customer service to tailor and all facets. So, so we That's try to work with them, and then just like, hey, when you're ready, come back to us, or even better yet, go out there and work with the distributors. And then when it gets flat lines, come to us, because they'll have all these new brands come in that they will, you know, their focus will go to those new brands.
Well, there's so much out there now. I mean, I was just talking with Maria from Carnivore and she was saying, which I didn't know this number, there are 150, I think she said just 150 like brands of food that come out every year. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, the pet world has boomed and there are a lot of hands in the pot. So if you want to get into it, I think you have to kind of be thoughtful. Even if you're just getting started, you know, you sort of have to think about all the things you just mentioned, but also kind of differentiate yourself. So there's a lot of things to think about for sure.
Agree. You know, and it's funny, like that's one of the brands we started with in a pretty early on, and love those guys. And and sometimes there's that agreement, Talia, with a manufacturer. It's like, okay, we get you to here. And then by that point, you're probably better off with getting your own reps. You've made enough money where you can hire your own reps and you can focus on just that one line. You know, one of the other things that we try to do too is you work with a group, but you don't know what type of people they are. And you don't find that out until down the road, just like we were talking about with groomers and so forth. And and so if they don't really fit in with the culture, or they just have a different method of doing business than what we're used to or like to do, sometimes we just move on from there.
You know, that's
an important part of the equation. And I actually like to find out if they have investment investors as well.
Yes.
That's a different ballgame altogether.
Yeah, it's a good point.
I understand the evolution, but that's something that we would probably rather not be involved
with. Yeah. So you guys obviously have seen a lot of brands over the years, and you have a great lineup right now. What are some of your favorite brands maybe that you guys rep right now, or maybe some that you've worked with in the past?
God, there's so many. I mean, I love seeing something like a Tall Tales where they were in the very beginning.
Yeah,
to where they are now, when you go to a show and their booth is just packed and the products are amazing. And they really listened to us. They had great ideas to begin with and they had great quality, but it was a different world on the human side than it was on the pet side. And I have to just applaud them for working with us and listening, and they've just done an incredible job of growing.
Yeah, they love feedback too. I feel like they're always like, give us feedback. I just, I forget his name. The owner of the company just came through our store a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, it was awesome to meet him, and he was so complimentary and also just very receptive to like chatting. And again, he's like, if you ever have anything you're looking for, like, let us know. Like, so they love that feedback, which I think, especially in this ever-changing industry, is really important to obviously be aware of what's going on around you and trends. So I love that he was like, yeah, like let us hear ideas if you have any of them.
Yeah. He does it. He says it to us every time we're at a show, and he sits there and takes his notes and so, you know, that's one of them. And I feel like I should mention them all, which we can't do, but you know, there's, you know, Goonies, which is, I love what they're doing on a, sustainability level.
Yes.
And I think where that line can go in the future is just, it's can go a lot of different directions. And I like the practices that are being used over there in Iceland and this company and the Gunnar family that they're using. So that one's kind of cool. Of course, Independent and Momentum are kind of special to us.
That's right.
Are part of our family. But there's like new companies like Canafora that we just brought on, and
we just brought them into the store too. Yeah. They're doing really well. Cool. Yeah. Just like a week ago, maybe they arrived and they're already on our front display and people are really taken to them. So we love them already. Yeah.
I think you'll do really, really well with them. And we saw them a couple Globals or Super Zoos. I can't even remember which one, when they hadn't made it to the US market yet. And I was like, if this is done right, this could go really well. And it kind of goes back to what the dogs are supposed to do. Like my little one that
it's a great point.
She, she chews on wood all the time. She goes out there and gets it, you know. So I would rather her have something like this that's not going to splinter, you know, than my firewood or the sticks and stuff outside. But it's a great product and it's a great process. And so, and they're just at the beginning stages. So I like seeing someone from the Canifor stage all the way to the Tall Tale stage, which is well-developed and everybody knows the name.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, we love that new brand. We're excited to have them. And as we're getting towards the end here, I definitely want to talk about Momentum. We brought them in, I think it's only been like 3 months now into the shop, and we had our eye on them for a while. We just had to like kind of move some stuff around, and I know they went through like a package rechange and stuff like that. So talk about Momentum. Like, we love them, the treats, and, you know, I feel like it's unique as well in certain aspects.
Yeah, I was a fan of the company before I became involved with the company. And so I remember walking into a store and seeing this god-awful packaging. But it was just plastic, and it looked like a horse. I couldn't figure it out. I was thinking maybe that was the momentum of the horse.
The logo was rough. It's okay, though. It's evolved. Yeah.
And they had a seasoning, and the way it was vacuum packed, it looked like the old vomit that you used to put on the floor. It's like fake vomit or whatever.
It looked like air, like astronaut, like packed food or something. You're like, what is this? Yeah.
Yes. So there was a lot of explaining to do, but I loved that somebody was actually going out there and doing organ meat for treats and stuff like that, because it's just one of those things that, you know, 85 or 90% of the dogs are not getting or getting enough of. And that's really, when you think about going back to the basics, that's what the animal does when they kill an animal. That's what they first go to, is the organ meat.
Yes.
It's so essential. So I fell in love with them and what they were doing. So I was like, I want to work with this company. And of course I talked to Rob. He's from Wisconsin. He's like, Greg, I'm on top of this. I've been talking to them for years because they're Wisconsin based. When we pulled it all together, because they just didn't really have a lot of money to go spend, you know, they're just a small mom and pop husband and wife. And I got to meet them, and they're just the most down to earth people. And I was like, oh my God, I just love these people.
Yeah.
And it was from the family business, from the father, but they had their own equipment. They only had their own warehouse. And I was like, where we can go with this with the right people, if we put our egos aside and let them do the manufacturing and they let us do what we need to do on the retail side of it, this could be special. And it's already kind of gotten there where we've got this buzz going about us. And so I'm really, really proud of it, because I think we're going to do the right things with, so that the dogs will like it and crave it, but also give them something that they need. And the cats as well, because the cats need that kind of stuff just as much as the dogs, where the treats aren't carb loaded or sugar loaded or anything like that or whatever, and they can actually get benefit out of it without putting on extra weight. Now we've got into the toppers and got into the cat skews, and now we've got into the bulk chews, which we've been producing, and we thought let's do that and do this.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, a lot of it is, which is my favorite, you kind of mentioned, is like single ingredient, freeze dried, high quality. So you got like your livers, your hearts. One of my favorites is a pork tenderloin, like the little bites. I love those. And then the toppers are crushing it, at least with us. I love the toppers. You have the antioxidant one. That one probably, I feel like, does the best for us. And again, just that one just has a few added like superfoods in it again, but freeze dried. You guys have the salmon, you guys have, I love the chicken with the sea kelp, which sometimes I know can be a little strange for people to grasp, because they're used to chicken, but like mixing with the sea kelp, but that one people really like in our store. And the package change has been great. And they also block really well, meaning they like hang really lovely in the set. So we love that. And the customers are definitely, they're loving all of the variety as well.
Good. Yeah. And we're using 50% less plastic, which is a good thing you know, today. And we're adding things that we didn't do before. We're doing a lot more with Astro and with rescue programs and that kind of stuff, and samples that we weren't able to provide before. So we want to grow this business the right way. And I love Toni because she's very picky about her sourcing, and you know, just a point in that real quick about what this is like. Like, we were using tripe And we're having difficult finding raw tripe because most of the people in this industry are either bleaching their tripe or they're scorching their tripe. And scorching isn't causing any issues with the dogs. It's just not giving the benefit that's needed.
We don't
feel like either one of those is, why would we do that just to put tripe on the package?
Yeah.
So we've got some of our top sellers. So we're trying to work our way through that, but we want to make sure we do it right. Out of our 37 SKUs or something like that, I'm losing count. I think we made it in the 40s, but I think 4 ingredients is the most that we have of any of them.
Yeah.
So we're trying to keep it minimalistic and try to have something that everybody can use and rotate if they want to rotate. So
yeah, no, yeah, it does definitely offer a lot of rotation. And honestly, the way I use most of those treats is I actually throw it in with the meals and I let it sit in, whether I'm rehydrating it with water, mostly it's bone broth and like goat's milk. And I always, Amanda and I, our manager at the store, we always talk about this. When you know you have a great treat, especially a freeze dry, when you rehydrate it and it feels exactly like it would if you're cutting fresh meat, like the pork, if you rehydrate it, it feels just like a little piece of pork tenderloin that you would chop. And it has that same consistency and it comes right back to life. And I think that's, obviously a great telling aspect if it's a great product and, you know, obviously the quality of it too.
Well, that's a great point. I'm glad you mentioned that. And you know, the other part is, as we grow this and grow the business, you know, it's hard sometimes when you have 5 or 6 people that are like, are going to agree on it. We are like, hey, let's just keep putting back into the company and let's just keep putting back into the company. And if whether we break even, that's fine. Let's just do that. And
yeah.
Right. And I like that we were first to market with things. I think sometimes you have to give credit to those that were the first with the CBD or with the organ meats and stuff like that. So it's been fun.
Yeah. You guys are, I feel like you're always really thoughtful about your brand selection. And like you kind of mentioned, if it's not working out or the views have changed or, you know, they don't line up, you part ways or, you know, you don't, you know, continue on together, which I think is totally fine. And I think that's why you guys always have a really great lineup that people are, especially like small businesses like ourselves, independents are always excited to take a look at.
Yeah. And you know, because of our relationship with our retailers like yourself and being in the field, we listen. And so like, if we hear something that's not going well, for whatever reason, we like to hear that information so that we can either make changes or go in a different direction. So we really listen. So
yeah.
Y'all's feedback as well.
Well, thank you. No, we love that. And as we're wrapping up, I'd like to ask one question at the very end to all my guests. It's just a fun question. So, Greg, what is your spirit animal? You can't say dog or cat. I mean, everything else is on the table and you can morph animals if you want to. You can come up with, you know, a fantastical animal or whatever, but something that you feel like embodies yourself.
God, I'm definitely not prepared for that one.
No one ever is. That's why it's fun. It's okay.
Well, no, this is the case, but monkey came to mind.
That's okay. Whatever comes to your mind first is usually, I feel like, the right animal.
I just think that there's something funny about them. They get to their business of what they do, but they don't take themselves too seriously. You know,
love that. Yeah. And
so I like the way monkeys operate and they take care of each other, but
That's great. I love that answer. No one said monkey yet. So I love that. That's really sweet. Well, thanks again. I love that we got to sit down. We've only got to talk here and there at the shows. We never get to really sit down and like talk about like kind of your history and why you guys do what you do. So thank you for being on today.
Yeah. I love that you do this. You know, I'm not.
Thank you.
I hope this industry doesn't get too technical and get too big with all these different stuff. But I think this is kind of using technology in the right way. It's kind of old school. It's almost kind of going back to radio and interviews and that.
Yeah.
Kind of
it's a good morph of like old and new. No, I never thought about that way. That's a good point though. Yeah. I love that.
And it's not to make money. It's not to benefit anything. It's just to have a conversation that hopefully is
fuller. Exactly. Just to expand upon all the things that we love.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy this. Thanks for having me. Thanks for inviting
me. Thanks, Greg. I appreciate it. And thank you guys. Thank you again for listening to the Wag Station podcast. We're honored you joined us and hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Please take a moment to leave a review in your podcast app. Also, if you're local to the Rhode Island area, be sure to check out our sister store, Wag Nation, where we specialize in dog and cat natural foods, holistic nutrition, high quality products, and dog grooming services. The shop is located on Bellevue Avenue in Newport, Rhode Island. You can find more info at wag-nation.com. The info you heard here today is for educational and informational purposes only. Be sure to consult your veterinarian for professional guidance if needed. You guys rock. Catch you next time.